golf world is just teeming with storylines right now.
The game has never been more controversial than it is this year.
I mean, they're pulling you in so many different directions. What's noise and what's not noise?
You can't almost believe what's happening in the game.
I did not envision any of this happening. It's just a totally different situation now than anything can happen.
You have picked a hell of a year to start following the PGA Tour.
That's a clip from the Netflix docuseries Full Swing. This behind-the-scenes series takes you inside the high-pressure, high-stakes lives of professional golfers. You could find yourself winning $1 million if you play well, or you could end up owing money if you have a bad day on the course. And sometimes the difference comes down to one shot. But you don't have to be a golfer to enjoy the series. Similar to Netflix's F1 docuseries Drive to Survive, Full Swing is packed with enough drama, heart, and cringe that will appeal to any reality TV fan. Executive producer Chad Mumm picked a hell of a year to give us an intimate look at the world of golf. The arrival of the controversial LIV Golf Tour means that the so-called gentleman's game is not so gentle anymore. Chad joins me now to share how he made Full Swing happen.
Every year I would meet up with the PGA Tour team in Las Vegas for the CES conference. And I like to play golf. They like to play golf. We would go out and talk about, a bunch of ideas and how we could work together. But this was always the top of my list was, we should do a doc series immersive inside the PGA Tour. And every year they would say, yeah, it sounds awesome, but we're not quite ready yet. And then 2019, I find myself in Las Vegas. We play golf again. And I brought it back up on the first hole. And by the 18th hole, we had sorted out what would eventually become Full Swing. And I think what had changed was, first off, the PGA Tour got new leadership. So Jay Monahan became commissioner. And I think, they were open to exploring new ways of reaching new audiences. And I guess, from that moment on, fast forward 3 months later, I'm at the Players Championship, the flagship PGA Tour event, meeting with the leadership team of the PGA Tour, talking about how we would bring this to life. And then a month later, I'm at Augusta National, standing outside the ropes with an index card full of players' agents with their names and faces, and flagging people down and telling about this project that we were trying to get started.
Yeah. You had one principle in your pitch to the PGA. What was it?
We wanted it to be authentic. And we had said, it has to be real. It has to be warts and all.
I think it's generally unfair to ask too much of our athletes when it comes to thinking about what goes on outside the lines. But in this case, you can't say that you don't know what you're doing.
You made this decision to go help Saudi Arabia, and here these atrocities are that you're helping hide.
The journey you've been told about Saudi Arabia is on. How is that journey helping the women oppressed in Saudi Arabia, the migrant groups, their rights violated, the LGBTQ individuals who were criminalized, the families of the 81 men who were executed in March, and those being bombed in Yemen?
It's a really hard question to answer. We're just here to focus on the golf.
One of the biggest stories was the launch of the competing and controversial tour LIV Golf. You featured several players who wrestled with the decision to play in the series. What was that like?
I think that we were never expecting that the LIV Tour to emerge in the middle of our filming. I think we had sort of heard some chatter about it, but it was a little bit uncertain about what, whether and when it was going to happen. And then I remember vividly being in Los Angeles at the Genesis, which is a tournament held at Riviera. And it was like the whole world got flipped upside down in 1 minute. And all of a sudden you have this camaraderie that exists on the PGA Tour, this kind of traveling circus. It's like a lot of players can put, kind of compare it to high school. And here we are, like now all of a sudden there's this division and kind of it's unprecedented in sports as far as I can tell, where you have something like this happen like during the season. It wasn't in the off season. It wasn't when players were all at home. They were all together in the locker room, in the same locker room, and looking at each other now with like a new kind of decision to make. And it was for us to have the access that we did to players like Ian Poulter, who, principally is the vehicle through which we tell that story. He had granted us a ton of access. And so we were watching in sort of real time as he wrestled with that decision. And I think you'll see in the show, it was a wrestle. I mean, there wasn't, I don't think he had his mind made up until, you know, quite late into the game.
In the 25 years I've played on tour, I've played European Tour and I've played the PGA Tour. I've played on the Japanese Tour, I've played on the Korean Tour. As an independent contractor, I'm doing nothing different to what I've always done. The hope in this is that we can all coexist.
So what we wanted to do was really let the players tell their side of the story, whether they stay or go. And we were able to have a lot of access to be able to see those, you know, kind of decisions come to fruition. And, you know, like I said, good or bad, our point of view was not to take a side. It was to let the players, you know, bring us into their world. And if it was important to them, it was going to be important to us.
Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it work so well. As you mentioned, you had access to players, and some of these players had won majors while you were filming. Some of them won majors while you were filming. And then you had access to players who were missing cuts and struggling with confidence. What scenario makes for more riveting storytelling?
I think that's what's so beautiful about golf is that it's, you know, the both can be true, that both can be compelling. And there's a, you know, golf is this incredibly individualistic sport that, you know, takes incredible skill to play well, physical skill, but also mental skill. And so much of this game takes place in that sort of 5-inch space between your ears or the player's ears. And the difference between a player in the top 10 in the world and a top, you know, 100 ranked player is like one shot per round. So wow. you realize that the margin for error out here is so razor thin. And our mission for the show is to try and understand sort of what is the difference, you know, what gives those players that extra edge. So for us, it was always important to have players who weren't necessarily just winning majors. And we wanted to have some examples of just how much of a grind it is out there on the PGA Tour. You know, when we were filming last year, if you didn't make the cut after Thursday and Friday, you didn't make any money. And you've now spent, you know, you've been on the road for a week, you've had hotel rooms, you're paying for your caddy, you've got your physical trainer, you've got, you know, it's expensive to play and travel in pro golf. And if you're not making cuts, you're not making money. You're walking away in the red every week. And so we wanted to get a sense of what that feeling was like. And you know, we really got to see that through Joel Damon, through some of our rookie stories.
Yeah. You followed a lot of emotional arcs during this series. Is there one golfer story that stands out to you?
I think Tony Finau really stands out to me because I also am a dad. And, you know, I've traveled a lot for this show and been on the road a lot. And that pull back towards home of being there for your young children, sort of make sure you see them in their moments, see them growing up when you're living a life on the road. It's difficult.
It's so special just to have my family here with me. And there's been a lot of people that have got me to this point. And I'd be selfish not to thank so many people, but my parents and my wife are people that have supported me from day one. You know, this one's for them.
Tony Finau, you have earned this victory. Go celebrate with your family. Congratulations.
Tony's story is one that I found to be so inspiring because of his background and everything that he's gone through. And to be both a great father, and as you ask, you know, players out here on the tour, like what, the nicest guy on the tour, and also a competitor that can, you know, win twice in a row. It's super inspiring. And I want to be like Tony Finau.
Yeah. One of the major developments that happened during your filming was Rory McIlroy becoming the ambassador of the PGA Tour. How did you manage to get Rory on board?
We had talked to Rory's team for the last, you know, year when we first started filming, and his team, they were great to work with, but they had sort of graciously declined to be a part of season one. And, you know, I think their rationale was he's going to focus on golf, which I completely understand. He's one of the game's preeminent faces and, you know, generationally talented Hall of Fame player. But we kept noticing as we were filming, you know, Rory was still there at our events and we had access to his friends and we were filming around in locker room, same locker rooms that he was in. And we just kept noticing him popping up in the background of shots and sometimes in the foreground, you know, coming and joining our cast members as we were filming with them and really not shying away from the camera. So we thought, well, maybe there's an opportunity here. And late in the season, I just kind of steeled myself to go and make the ask directly. So I went and met with him Monday morning of a tournament. And it makes it sound like we had an arranged meeting. I really just showed up at the clubhouse first and waited around for him to get there. And he was sitting alone in a room and having breakfast. And I went and sat down with him. And told him I thought that the world needed to hear his voice.
I mean, sometimes I think what a time to get involved in all this stuff with everything that's happening in the professional game. It's been contentious at times, and I've maybe leaned into that part of it a little too much and made it a little too personal in my mind, but I feel like what some people have done has affected the rest of the profession. So I'm just trying to defend what I think is right.
And to Rory's credit, he said yes in that 10-minute meeting, and an hour later he had a mic on and, you know, was all in. He doesn't do things halfway.
Yeah. You caught some serious candid behind-the-scenes commentary from Rory. Do you think that was played up for your cameras, or was that genuine?
I think it was genuine. I mean, Rory certainly has given us no indication that he is not anything but his truest self in every interaction that we have with him. And he is polished and as accomplished as a player he is, I think he's even more impressive as a person and as a thoughtful leader. And a very just naturally charismatic leader. And I think, of course, he's genuine.
Based on your Josh Allen post, you're a Josh Allen fan. And he's a PGA Tour fan.
Yeah, but he's a Phil Mickelson fan, so I don't know if that's...
that's true.
Sounds like Sky losing credibility.
He means everything he says, and I think it was fun to sort of see inside his world a bit and just to see the relationships he has with these other great players. And you know, that to me, that room, you know, that was at the very end of the year, Tour Championship. It's like, this is the last gasp of that camaraderie, you know, that they'd have. Those players have been playing together for years. And I think it gives you a sense of just how real and unfiltered the access that we had was.
You used an innovative technique to generate more authentic reactions from players. What did you do?
We decided to start recording our first interviews with each player before we shot anything on video or on film. We sat them down and did an audio only interview, and they spent so much time under a microscope. You know, the media is all around them at all times. There's cameras after each round, there's cameras at press conferences. So we wanted them to come in and sit down and just tell us about who they were in their own words. So we started with no cameras, no lighting. We actually asked them to come in street clothes, you know, not in your golf outfits, and sit down with us and you know, just have a conversation. And it was amazing to see the difference in their posture, just sitting down at a table and having a conversation versus, you know, the lights in your face and the big camera lenses there. And you tend to open up, be a little more free. And when we first started those interviews, you know, I remember sitting back there with Paul, and after the first one was over, we looked at each other and we said, you know, we've got a real show here, because the player who had come in, you know, was very well known and had a very, you know, I think very established brand, you know, for good or bad. And the person that we saw in front of us in the chair was the opposite, was completely different, totally open, completely vulnerable, and really taking us into their struggle. And it was fascinating from the first minute.
Yeah. And I imagine you don't want to tell us who that player was.
No, I will. It was Brooks Koepka.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Brooks Koepka came in, and I give him a lot of credit. He came in by himself, you know, no agents, no entourage, and sat down and you know, for an hour and a half, just opened up. And as a golf fan my whole life, you know, as a person who has watched a ton of PGA Tour golf, has watched a lot of Brooks Koepka, I was shocked by the person sitting in front of me.
I've had these question marks for like the last year and a half. Are they going to be the same golfer? Am I ever going to be the same? And I still don't know where I'm at.
He was one of the most fascinating and interesting people that we had the pleasure to film with. And I think his story will surprise many people who watch the show.
Yeah. One person who looms large over the whole series but is not featured is Tiger Woods. Did you approach Tiger to be part of the series?
I wouldn't be doing my job if we didn't.
Right.
But, you know, Tiger's schedule was uncertain for the year. You know, we weren't sure when he was going to play, when he was coming back. So, you know, we really weren't counting on it, just given his injury and you know, the sort of uncertainty of him returning. And he and one of the things that was consistent about this show was every single player who came in and sat down with us, they said the reason why they're playing pro golf is because of Tiger Woods. And I mean, to a man, everybody said that. And so it became clear that, you know, his impact, not just on the wider world of sports and golf, but just on these players, you know, they owe so much to him. And they were very open about saying that. So he definitely factors in as a figure that has had a huge impact on many of these players. And in some of their stories, you know, really takes a large role. But, you know, we'll have to we'll have to save Tiger for later.
Yes, of course. Are you hoping that this series can do for golf what Drive to Survive did for F1 racing in terms of transcendence?
I think any expectation that we could do even an ounce of what Drive to Survive has done for Formula One would be amazing. I mean, that would be the dream. I think, you know, for us, we feel like we've made an amazing show. We've captured the spirit of pro golf. We had a bunch of amazing characters that are interesting, not just to golf fans, but I think to general audiences. And I think we've made something that hopefully people will really enjoy. And if it has even an ounce of the impact that Drive to Survive has had, then, you know, we'll have been wildly successful.
Very well said. Chad Mumm, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on Full Swing.
Thank you so much.
Chad Mumm is the executive producer of the Netflix docuseries Full Swing. Find out more at WPR.org/beta.
But I think this story is about really childhood friends, that kind of like hothouse atmosphere of the intimacy you have and that you can only have when you're age 13 and have like hundreds of hours to spend together.
Coming up, Gabrielle Zevin joins us to talk about her intoxicating novel, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.